This is Eric Bledsoe of the Phoenix Suns. Listen to Your Suns Rise this season on the BS of the Sun podcast.
You know that it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on.
Welcome back to the BS of the Sun podcast. This is Jim Kochenour, and joining me tonight is Dave King. And the season is upon us. This podcast will be posting Tuesday morning, and that's actually kind of like the eve of the NBA basketball. So it's like NBA basketball eve. It's not quite as good as Christmas Eve, but for everybody who's been waiting for NBA basketball all summer, it's been a long wait, and it's finally here. Dave, are you ready for the season to begin?
I am. I'm tired of waiting for it to start. And it's been a really long summer, and now we're only 2 days away from the Suns opener. By the time we're listening to this, we're only 1 day away. I think some basketball is even starting on Tuesday night, if I'm not mistaken.
So for NBA basketball, yes. For Suns basketball, no. We got to wait just a little bit longer. So I know a lot of people are definitely ready for that game. The Suns, we've been looking at this from a lot of different angles. We've been parsing through stuff this preseason. We're going to have more stuff on the site, things that we're expecting to see, what we're hoping to see, what we're scared that we might see. And I know I got those up. Predictions for the season. We're going to get Paul on here soon, Paul Quaro from the Arizona Republic. But what are you expecting to see Wednesday night, Dave, the Suns season opener? What are we going to be looking for in that game?
I'm going to be looking for a couple of things. First thing, I'm going to be looking for how aggressive their defense is, but also whether they can contain themselves and not rack up 30 fouls being aggressive. And then the other thing I'm going to look at is their passing. The Suns were actually fifth in the league in preseason assists, so that doesn't mean a whole lot, but it's better than they've been either of the prior two preseasons under Hornacek. So I think that's a big plus. A year ago, they were 27th in assists in the preseason, so they weren't even passing before the games counted. We'll see how this season goes, but it's got a promising start. I'd like to see a few more passes, and I'd like to see a few more stops.
Do you think Tyson Chandler is going to have a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, vendetta against his old team? Is he going to try to go out there, or even maybe not a vendetta, but wanting to try to do really well against his former teammates?
Oh, absolutely. I think I really am expecting a double-double on that first game, if not something approaching like 15, 18 points and 15, 18 rebounds from Chandler. He's going to want to prove to them that they shouldn't have let him go in free agency, or at least shouldn't have given them 6 or 10 hours to think about somebody else and sign with the Suns before he even gave them a chance to change their mind. So, yeah, I think Tyson Chandler has something to prove. My concern is how many games he'll play this year. Obviously, he's got a little bit of a history of injury to various parts of his body. Nothing long term. Nothing that takes him out half seasons or whole seasons. But he's got nicks that come up time to time. And the same with Alex Len. So it would be great if one of them was playing in all 82 games this year, even if each one misses 5 or 10 games apiece.
And those guys have to cooperate with that whole injury thing so that when they do need time off, it's kind of like when you schedule time off from work, your vacation time. That's what they have to do with their injuries. So I think we got Paul on the line now, Dave. So I'm going to bring Paul Quaro from the Arizona Republic on to join the show. Paul, this is Jim, Bright Side of the Sun. How are you doing tonight?
Good, Jim. How are you?
I am outstanding. We got Dave on the line also with us, Paul. Hey, Dave, you want to go ahead and get us started with Paul?
Absolutely. How's it going tonight, Paul?
All's well. We're under 48 hours till real ball, so it's a lot better than the past few months.
Yeah, no kidding. I just got finished watching the Cardinals barely eke out a win. They somehow found a way to lose a huge lead in the last 5 minutes, or almost lose a huge lead, but then eventually found a way to win, so that was pretty good. Now I'm ready to talk some basketball. Sun's going to play at least a couple of games before the next time the Cardinals play, so let's focus on the Suns. And tell me, Paul, after you saw all the preseason games, and I only saw the first three home games. Tell me what you think of the Suns passing this year, and if that's something that's here to stay, or if that's just that was just a preseason experiment, and they're going to go back to straight pick and rolls again.
Yeah, it was definitely a goal of theirs, and you know the preseason stats bear out that you know they did it well. But I'm like you, I'm a little bit reserved about anything from the preseason. There's teams that you know lose every year and succeed in the regular season, and vice versa. So, but and, you know they're at least carrying out goals for camp. You know, also a lot of reservations about how well they passed because just because of the history of the two point guards, you know, Bledsoe and Knight have been both high assist to turnover ratio guys in their past, and until it's not so much about the assists but reducing turnovers at the same time to improve their passing. But the good part about the team ball was that they did move the ball better, and they did seem to be more willing to make extra passes, and that, you know, they've got a lot of guys who can make plays from different positions. And you know, it didn't help to have Bledsoe out for three games, but it forced the ball into some other guys' hands, and so we could see that Sonny Weems really has a great all-round feel for the game to move the ball along, and the big men certainly are all, you know, Keith we already knew was a good passer for a power forward, but, you know, guys like John Moore, who we've only seen in bits and pieces over the years, he definitely has that same type of feel. You know, he grew up as a guard, so it's not foreign to him, and then you go right on down the line to other guys that did it well, but I think it's going to come from the point guards to pass better.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely think it's going to come from the point guards. But to be a team that's going to be in the upper half of the league in assists, and really it only matters to be that high in the league in assists if you're going to score more points that way. So, you know, let's not fool ourselves. 2 years ago, the Suns were a top 10 offense and 29th in assists. So it doesn't really matter how many assists they get, but it is more fun to watch a few more passes before somebody's trying to break down a defender and score.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you know what, the system is built to have two guards who can score on their own. So the assists, I wouldn't expect them to be a top assist team in the league. You know, those two guys are going to get points on their own, and they're going to, if they're playing at a fast pace, they're going to score in fast breaks a lot unassisted. And but, you know, we did see even in transition that they passed well. And you know, the tempo that they moved at was pretty good all throughout preseason, and that stems from the way they practice and camp and stuff, you know, playing fast. And I think a lot of that, too, comes from the defensive intensity that's growing. And that was something that was built during practices. And the more pressure that those guards felt, the faster they had to move up court. And, you know, between that and short shot clocks and practice and stuff like that, they moved fast.
It does seem like there's only a few sure things in life. You got debt, you got taxes, and you have coaches promising more passing and more defense in preseason.
Especially with the Suns, right?
Yeah, especially for the Suns. But so do you think, though, that that the Suns really do have a kind of mentality to work harder on D this year? And is it just Tyson Chandler dependent on that, or do you think all the guys have really stepped up?
Well, that was my first reaction from what they did in July, was that they were going to be a better defensive team. Just the fact that they had Tyson Chandler at the back and had two guards who are pretty decent defenders who could apply pressure and then Tucker on a wing. And so I immediately thought that that was the area that they would grow in, just for the fact for personnel. But one of the things Jeff Hornacek really has got across is playing time is going to be dictated by defense. And you know, I think you have to give a little bit of credit to the front office too, because now they have depth at every position where it doesn't have to ring hollow when he says something like that. They've got somebody else to go to at every spot if somebody's not bringing it. You know, I think there was a time during preseason where TJ Warren was probably starting to push PJ for that starting job, and so PJ turned it up a notch and got back to the PJ Tucker that, you know, wins Hustle Awards every year. so I think there's, and you can go at every position for that, you know, three deep at power forward, obviously a tag team at center, and the way that they can rotate guards is at either spot to that position. And so I think that's the mentality that grew from what Hornacek was getting across.
So one of the downsides of your coach making playing time a factor of how hard you're playing on defense is that's a little bit subjective. I know you can have the stats, and I know the Suns have designed a new stats board that they had up at halftime in one of the preseason games where they showed people's success, player success on defense. But some of that's going to be subjective during the game. And I know Hornacek really needs to keep his guys focused. Do you see any concern there, say if Markieff Morris takes a few plays off, that if he gets benched for a John Lure, if he's going to sulk a little bit, or if Brandon Knight does the same thing and gets benched and suddenly Sonny Weems played 30 minutes that night? Is there a bit of a worry on this team, kind of like last year, where they might fracture a bit?
I think that would probably be true in 30 locker rooms. I think that, I mean, here maybe because of the depth, it's a little different where your second unit can quickly become a finishing unit depending on how they're playing. But, and Markieff Morris's case certainly is different because you don't want that, you know, they've made such good strides to get that to be normalized that you don't want anything to take a step back there. But, that's always going to be a concern. That's a huge part of the head coaching job is handling egos and attitudes. And, I think we don't see it all, but I think he's up front with people individually and as a group about this stuff. So it's not a surprise when it happens. That's going to be something he's going to have to handle on a case-by-case basis. And every one of these guys is different. You know, the personalities of these guys are all different for how they would take something like that.
Yeah, so it looked like in the last couple of changing gears a bit. It looked like the last couple of games, Sonny Weems has started getting more minutes. He was one of the team leaders in minutes through the preseason, but it seemed like Hornacek was settling on a rotation in the last couple of games, from what I could tell, with Sonny Weems being the first guard off the bench and Devin Booker and Archie Goodwin not playing much at all. So do you see that's how the season's going to play out, at least in the first half?
Yeah, from the moment they signed Sonny, I think that was the intent. You know, they don't go out and pursue a guy that's 29 and playing in Europe to come in and just be on the end of the bench. They brought him in to bring his seasoning and experience, and you know he's a little bit of Gerald Green, but with good factors on some of Gerald's bets. You know, he's not the shooter or the dunker that Gerald is, but he's not going to make crazy plays and have his head spun the wrong way on defense either. So, but I think of anybody on this roster, I think Sonny Weems probably quickly endears himself to fans more than anybody. I think he's going to be a guy that comes in with a lot of energy. He's probably got the fastest wheels on the team. And that's saying something considering who the guards are, but he really flies up and down the court and changes things in transition with the way he moves. Even if he doesn't have the ball, he puts pressure on a wing by getting up court so fast and opening up the other wing. He's shot decent enough. It's going to make fans cringe who haven't watched him very much yet in a Matrix sort of way. You're going to have to become accustomed to how it looks. It's better than when he left the NBA 4 years ago, but it's not much prettier. It just goes more. And that's kind of the point where Sean Marion got at some point, where the form wasn't pretty, but it was consistent. And so at one point, you know, Phil Weber back then, the shooting coach, was like, he was fine with it because he was at least doing the same motion every shot. Sonny turns his feet in and kind of cocks his hands, but he had decent success with it in preseason. He's not going to fill it up from outside like Gerald, but he had his moments where he'd hit a corner three or keep somebody honest, but he's super active. He's long. He's going to be a good defender. And, I don't think that rules out Devin Booker or Archie Goodwin at times for certain matchups. And I think we've seen over the past couple of years that Hornacek tries to keep everybody engaged, even when out of the rotation. He seems to go out of his way to plug a guy in here or there, not just in fourth quarter time, but in a second quarter, maybe when the team's struggling or when there's a certain matchup. So I could see either one, you know, Devin for some shooting or Archie just for some, energy to attack the rim a little bit or speed up the pace.
Yeah, I'm really, I'm actually what I'm really starting to like about this team, at least the look of the team, they may not be 100% effective all the time, but that second unit is going to have some real energy between Sonny Weems at guard and John Luehr at power forward if he's not in, if you know if Mirza is not in there instead. But you've got some real energy in there, and that helps like an Alex Len really patrol the paint and knowing he's got some guys who are running around and bringing the energy, he can just stand there and be calm and control the paint a little bit. And then, of course, Ronnie Price, if he gets any minutes at the point guard, he's just a bulldog out there. And some of the steals he got in preseason were just pretty impressive. They're just effort steals. It's just crazy. So those kind of things, I mean, that'll remind us a little bit of the last Suns' exciting second unit that I can recall back in the, 2009-2010 range, where Lou Amundson was coming off the bench and bringing the energy. And Jared Dudley at the time was considered an energy guy off the wing. This is kind of exciting seeing these guys come in and potentially change the pace of the game.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think sort of like that team that you mentioned, 2010, there's probably going to be some times where these guys are going so well that they finish the games, you know, it may be in pieces or as a unit, but, you know, I think we already saw it in some preseason where when T.J. Warren gets rolling, I don't think P.J. Tucker's coming back in. If Warren's got that... got that game flow, and you don't break that up. And PJ even volunteered to pull himself off of checking in during the Spurs game because it was that moment where TJ made a couple great defensive plays, which is what everybody really wants to see from him. He stripped Kawhi Leonard, you know, just standing at the top of the key, stripped the ball from him and dunked it, and then deflected a pass to create a turnover. And so once he gets slashing and feeling his floaters a little bit, he'd be hard to pull out. And you were right about, you mentioned John Luehr's energy, and I think that's going to be sort of a tandem backup situation with him and Teletovic, but Luehr just fits the system so well in a way that Memphis never could have used him because he's shooting it really well, even at taking out the three-point. I think Hornacek early on talked about him being more of a mid-range guy, occasional three, but he shot the three really well, especially at the end of preseason. But the most important thing is he just does all the right things. He puts a body on guys on the glass. He's passing the ball. He sets good screens. He's just really solid in all those ways the coaches want.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of T.J. Warren, he's our new active hands guy, right? We haven't had one of those since Jared Dudley either. Most athletic hands in the NBA, wasn't that the nickname or moniker for him?
I think it was more illusion with Jared Dudley. I think TJ actually had a quick hit.
But that is really the case with TJ Warren. Is he's going to have to be consistent on defense and at least have more positive plays than negative plays. But you're right, once he starts scoring, there's just no stopping him. Even P.J. Tucker was up and getting excited. Of course, that was only preseason. But I think that TJ is the kind of guy who can handle having a guy take his minutes that's playing so well. I think where guys are going to struggle is if the dude who's replacing them isn't doing very well either. But I think T.J. Warren is a kind of quiet guy who's just going to start pouring it in some games, and we're all going to wonder if anyone's going to be able to stop him on his weird array of shots that seems like he can't get the ball off, and he does.
Yeah, and the yeah, I think you're right about Tucker accepting it. He's probably the right type of starter. I mean, P.J. Tucker's incredibly competitive, and every year he fights to keep that starting job or earn it. And every year we wonder whether he should be starting, and then he shows that he should be.
Right.
But I think in a way that, there's certain guys around the league, that start but might play 15 minutes some nights. And I think P.J. Tucker is going to be like that on some nights. Some nights he's going to be usual P.J. Tucker, but the last two seasons he's been at 30 minutes, and I just don't see that happening again this year, not through any fault of his, but just because they have that kind of depth with T.J. now to do it. I'm sure there'll be a push from fans once T.J. starts showing he's improved again to start, but he doesn't really, without the three-point shot in this game, he doesn't really bring that extra element to the starting lineup to open up anything that P.J. doesn't. P.J.'s actually a better three-point shooter than T.J. Warren. And for whatever reason, T.J.'s got a great mid-range shot and just hasn't been able to take it out to that line yet. And I don't think we'll see him taking many of those this year.
Right. Yeah, no, definitely. I do have a worry about Markieff Morris and T.J. Warren being in the same lineup because they both like to work in the mid-range, and that'll just hurt the spacing for the guards on drives. But I know fans on our side, at least, are getting a little tired of us talking about spacing, and you know, the Suns end up being last in the league in three-point shooting, and that doesn't help spacing either. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point about the change in three-point shooters on the team. There really hasn't been a lot added. I mean, Booker obviously is a great shooter, but he's probably not going to be in the rotation right away. So at some point, he's an added shooter too. But Teletovic, you know, I think he's not far from the form of 2 years ago when he hit 39%. So he's a quality shooter. If you see any practices, he's clearly the best shooter on the team. He could just light it up once he feels it. So easily too. It's such a effortless shot almost, you know, it doesn't take a lot. But I think where they feel their 3-point shooting improvement will come is more internal, that they have decent to good shooters on the team who will shoot better. And, you know, mainly Brandon Knight, who didn't look anything like Brandon Knight in his time in Phoenix last season, but had proven before that, I think, what was he at, 38% in Milwaukee before the trade? Borderline East All-Star and all that. So I think, you know, you'll see him kind of regain his form a little bit now that he has more comfort about his shot, where it's coming. He seems to have embraced that he's going to be off the ball mostly when Bled's out there and then on the ball when he's not. So I think that, and they expect Bledsoe to shoot better. You know, they said it's, you know, looked a lot better from voluntary workouts through practices, but the proof will be in the regular season games for that. And other than that, yeah, there's going to be times where they really miss some of those guys. But, you know, like with a guy like Gerald Green, you're going massive ups and downs, not really a consistent shot. So if they can have some more consistency with their three-point game, that would be helpful.
Yeah, for sure. And I think even with Teletovic now, I was talking up John Luehr a little bit ago, but really what Teletovic brings is the threat. Like he's got, I guess some people call it gravity. He pulls defenders out because they know he can not only shoot at a high percentage, but he also gets a shot off in about 0.1 second. And, and as opposed to John Luehr and Markieff Morris, who have to really wind up to get that shot off, maybe Markieff a little bit slower than Luehr, but Luehr is even really pushing that ball up, whereas Teletovic just gets it off with, you know, so quick that defenders are going to have to stay up tight on him when he's on the floor. And I really see that as a big plus in terms of spacing, maybe playing with T.J. Warren, because Warren's not going to be pulling people out like that. But if you got like a Brandon Knight out there and a Booker or a Weems and T.J. Warren and Teletovic and Alex Len, I think that's a pretty good lineup. I know Jim is a little bit not as convinced that the second unit's going to be a plus this year, just because they have very little NBA time period with Weems and Teletovic spending most of their careers overseas. But I'm looking forward to it, and I'm kind of thinking that second unit's going to be fun to watch.
Well, I think a key point, too, is that a lot of times for that second unit, Brandon Knight's going to be the point guard. So it's not just
right.
Bench guys. They're going to design their rotation so that they have one of those guys running that offense. I mean, there'll be times when it is Ronnie Price, and, you know, and I'm sure it's going to be, I don't know, I would guess 50 games out of Ronnie Price or something like that. You know, there'll be times when they go with Bledsoe and Knight all game, and there'll be some times where Ronnie Price is the right change of pace to put some defensive pressure on a certain type of point guards and gets cuts into those minutes a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, you move Alex Len from a pretty good run as a starter last year into a backup role, and you have two quality fours that you can match up situationally, and T.J. Warren growing into a much better player. It looks pretty good down the line. Sonny Weems, I think he's probably going to turn out to be one of those finds that just makes a lot of plays. He's just become a really good basketball player from his time. You know, he played at high levels overseas. He played with Ettore Messina with CSKA Moscow. He's been coached up quite a bit for the last 4 years.
Okay, let me change gears a little bit. Well, first of all, let's see if Jim is back. Jim, are you back?
Jim is back.
Yeah.
All right. Jim has terrible phone service. Jim has terrible phone service. I was wanting to ask you, do you think that there is any added pressure on Ryan McDonough and or Jeff Hornacek for the team to make the playoffs this year, considering the drought they're currently in?
Absolutely. I mean, I think everybody's feeling it, and probably starts with ownership. You're on the brink of having the longest playoff drought in franchise history, and in the market, they've become an afterthought in sports, especially when the Cardinals are rolling like they are. But, you know, this town has tended to wait and see on some teams before they jump on, and they've had to wait and see a long time on this on this crew. I think, you know, Jeff with his contract situation will depend on some success this year, and Ryan McDonough, for as much as the roster's been changed over in the time he's here, people will want to see results from that, you know, besides just, you know, it's you could see they were almost hurt by that first year so much because they took such a giant step forward. That last year really looked like a step back, and it was more for how things went down, such bad chemistry stuff and upheaval, and then just a nosedive at the end with the injuries and everything. So it would be a lot different if they'd had a slow, gradual rise, but it's been pretty traumatic up and down.
I was just going to ask a quick question about Jeff Hornacek's contract. I know lots of coaches go into their final year of coaching without having an extension, without having another end. And they're not really that's not really a big story in the papers. It's not one of those lame duck coach this and that in the NBA, at least. But a lot of coaches, their contracts will expire in the year they're coaching. Is this unusual that Jeff is coaching into this final guaranteed year and they haven't even picked up the contract option? Or do you think that's just par for the course for the NBA in general?
A little bit of both. I don't think it's unusual at all for how it's been in Phoenix with Sarver. I mean, he's tended to not extend people before he needs to. He comes from an industry where contracts are contracts, and you address it when it comes up. He's obviously gone a little bit over more to the sports side and eaten some contracts and that sort of thing that were mistakes in the past. But I think with Jeff, Hornacek, I think a lot of that has to do with the way they finished last season. The timing probably was difficult to say, you know, would they lose 10 of their last 11 games and finished under 500 and had their fifth straight non-playoff year? It might have been hard to come out and say, yep, we're on the right track. So I think, you know, I think they expect a better season this year, and I think they expect some good things to happen early and momentum. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see something happen during the season, you know, just once it's built back into a positive direction, if that's, you know, what we all expect. I don't know that we all expect it. I think they have some doubters still. I think they're definitely in that playoff mix for those last couple spots in the West. And, you know, the schedule early kind of benefits them, and they get off to a good start, then maybe we'll see something then.
Yeah, Paul, one of the biggest things, and maybe you can speak on this a little bit better because you've probably had a chance to see this dynamic, them interact a little bit earlier this season. Brandon Knight and Eric Bledsoe, I think that if these two guys play well together and both succeed, then the Suns have a chance to be a pretty good team. Have you seen anything where these guys that makes you believe that they will succeed? Because at the end of last year, they didn't play much. It didn't work. During the preseason, they haven't really played much. Eric was out with the flu a little bit. And Brandon Knight hasn't really looked that good to me. What are your thoughts on that pairing?
Yeah, you're right. It's still hard to judge because of all the things you said. Plus, Brandon doesn't feel like he's 100% from that April ankle surgery. He's, you know, you've seen him look more like a shooter, and that's a lot of that is because he doesn't have full confidence about doing the explosive type movements and driving and leaping and that sort of stuff, getting to the rim that you would expect him to do like he's done in the past. I mean, he's been a guy that drives and dunks. So that's part of it. You know, Bledsoe misses half of the preseason. They don't really get a lot of time together. The thing that I give credence to is their attitudes toward it. You know, they both
seem really optimistic about it. They get along with each other. They both get their roles. They're both driven. You know, people don't really know Brandon Knight yet, but the guy's a gym rat. The guy works all out all the time, gets extra shots, and he's always trying to get back to where he was. He's very serious about the game, very intellectual. And then you guys have all heard about Bledsoe's commitment in the offseason to be here for almost the whole summer, and that was just such an about face with him. And, you know, and I think with him, a lot of it is the condition he's in. He put in a summer of training with the Suns athletic trainers, so it's not like you ever question Bled's body and strength and stuff like that, but he's just a little bit more built or well-conditioned for the long haul this time, so that, you know, he just went through his first full season as a starter. He'd never done that before, and now that he's done that, you would expect him to take that next step forward, and if he's a little bit better conditioned to handle it, then that should put out some good results.
All right, so, Paul, we had a tough loss. The NBA felt a tough loss in the last couple of days of Flip Saunders passing away to cancer, and he was just diagnosed just over this past off season as well. Can you talk for a couple of minutes just on your own interactions with him, even if it's just, you know, game coverage and pregame interviews and postgame interviews and stuff? And what's your recollection of Flip and his impact on the game of basketball?
Flip's a class guy, just handled everything really. You know, we don't get to know the opposing coaches that well sometimes, but through people who do know them well, you know, the Timberwolves beat writers and Pistons guys and Wizards guys, you find out what coaches are really like when they're dealing with them every day. And just a really classy guy, and probably never given enough credit for how smart he was with the game. And, you know, he's sort of like that George Karl, Phil Jackson type of breed, those guys that came up through the CBA and stuff and the minor leagues before there was D-League and earned their way into the NBA. I mean, he won more than 1,000 games. Like, he knew what he was doing, and I'll always remember more for those KG Minnesota teams. That franchise was on the brink of something really great. I mean, they had a really good run, but they were sort of like the Suns there, you know, for their own Nash era. You know, the KG era was sort of like that, where they were just so close to getting over, and they were a lot of fun to watch back then, and offensively ingenuitive. And but, you know, at this point, when you hear people talk about him, it's, you know, Jerry Feasting, one of the Suns assistants, was on his staff at Minnesota when he first started there, and was talking about him today a little bit, and, you know, he could see the emotion in him for what a good person he was, more than what he meant anything basketball-wise.
All right. Hey, thanks, Paul. We don't want to keep you too much longer. Jim, do you have any other questions for Paul?
Yeah, real quick. The Suns are kicking off the season second game with the Steve Nash Ring of Honor ceremony. Is that going to be a special night for you to be there too, Paul? What are your thoughts about the way the Suns handled that, got that done the way they should?
Yeah, this is like the quickest Ring of Honor induction ever. It was like he retired. I was in a fantasy league draft the other day, and his name was still on the list. He's not even off of those lists. But, yeah, this is going to be a really cool night. You know, so much of what I've done the last 11 years covering the team is about him and what he created and meant to the franchise. And, you know, talk about Flip, and I'd say some of the same things about Steve, just a really good person who got all aspects of, and beyond it, I could tell you about him as a player, and you guys know it all because you've seen it all, but as a person, he treated everybody in every walk of life so well. Didn't matter who they were. He made every interaction with people special because he got what it meant to everyone, whether it was a sick kid in the hospital or a security guard on the way out or a beat writer that he's meeting for the first time. You know, I remember I talked to him once when he still played for Dallas about the prospects of him coming to Phoenix. And then when he got introduced at the Suns press conference in 2004, I went up to him. I was like, "Hey, Steve, I'm Paul. I don't know if you remember, I'm Paul Coro, the cover." He's like, "Oh yeah, we talked in Dallas. I remember you. Hey, Paul," or before he even said my name. And that's just the kind of guy he is. He's a people person who got it. And just, he's so much bigger than basketball with the things he's done. You know, like he's that day that he goes in the Ring of Honor, they're having a ceremony over at Educare. I don't know if you guys know that. It's a school that's in East Phoenix where his foundation helped build a medical and dental and health unit so that the school was all encompassing with all those types of needs for those kids, like, you know, just dental cleanings and doctor checkups and that kind of stuff, so that, you know, kids who can't get to a hospital or get to a dentist can just have it done at school. And, you know, stuff like that is just so beyond being what a great player he was.
Yeah, that's going to be pretty fun, being there on Friday night when there's the induction. What do you think about the fact that the Suns are having a hard time selling it out, though?
Not a surprise at all. I mean, it's just the way these fans have been for the past couple of years. I mean, it's disappointing that for Steve Nash they haven't just jumped on and done it, but, you know, I think as the hype builds up a little bit more toward Friday, you know, it'd be really nice if it had that same sort of feeling that his last game did, when you just had that organic "we want Steve" cheer, and you want it to be special for him. You don't want him to look up and see, you know, 30 rows, or not 30, but 30 empty seats at the top of each upper deck section.
Right.
I think it'll get there, and I'm sure the Suns will go out of their way to make sure it does, you know, for both these games. I wouldn't expect either one of them to not be sellouts in the end, and I think that's why you see them doing a lot of things like pushing sales on tickets and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really fun couple of days. Wednesday night against Dallas, Chandler's first game there. Well, not there, but here against his old team, and it being opening night, and then Friday with that Ring of Honor ceremony. I think those two games are going to be real special, and hopefully they're not the highlights of the year, but definitely they'll be the highlights of November.
Yeah, it's definitely a good way to start it off. I think it'll be – it's, you know, the best thing about Ring of Honor night is seeing all the people that come out for it. You know, you're going to have pretty much most of the Ring of Honor guys there, and then a lot of Nash's old teammates. You know, like when I was in San Antonio, Sean Marks said he was coming, and Boris Diaw was all disappointed that he couldn't because they have a game that night. There's a lot of those guys that want to be there for him that night.
Oh, man. That's going to be great. All right, Paul. Well, thanks for calling in and talking with us for a little while. And we'll catch up with you later on in the season. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, Jim. Thanks, Dave.
Bye, right. Paul.
Thanks, Paul. That was Paul Coro of the Arizona Republic joining us. And, Dave, I think that what they need to do is invest in some mannequins, because we've already heard Markieff Morris say they don't really cheer anyway. So if we have empty seats for that game, we can just sit them up there, and nobody will ever be able to tell the difference between them and regular Suns fans up there in the upper deck. So I think I've already got my tickets to the game. I know you're going to be there. I'm going as a fan, so I can cheer and do whatever I want. That's going to be a special night for you too, Dave. What are your thoughts about the induction?
Oh man, I was during the year that Nash was here, I was a season ticket holder, and not a full season ticket holder. I went to about 10-12 games a year, and just had an awesome time. That's my best experience as a Suns fan. I've been a Suns fan since the 80s, since Kyle Macy was the point guard. You know, it's been a long time for me, but the most fun years were the Nash years for sure, and for obvious reasons. They were certainly just really, really fun to watch and really exciting, and you could just feel the crowd anticipating every play. You know, when the ball would go down and Nash would be dribbling toward the hoop, you just knew something good was going to happen. You knew he was going to put it, you know, pocket pass it to Amari, or he was going to kick it out for a three-point shot or something like that. It's just you just always felt like something fun was going to happen. And in the later years, when Nash started slowing down, the team talent around him started diluting. It wasn't quite as full of anticipation, but it was still just so much fun watching Nash, even when he was hobbling up and down with the pubic shearing and all that. I think that was just a really wonderful time to be a Suns fan. Since getting my media credential and working for, Bright Side of the Sun, I haven't had a chance to be around a player quite as good as Nash. So I'm really looking forward to Friday. It'll be the first time I'll be in the scrum with Nash there. And the only thing I know is I heard he talks so low, you really got to stick your recorder up close to him or you're not going to be able to get it. But I'm really looking forward to that and all the other former Suns players. I'll be there pretty much as a fan because the only real players that I've met as a media member are the ones since Nash left. So, and that's no knock on the current Suns players, but really the talk of the night is going to be the former ones as Paul mentioned. I mean, he and Greg Grielu and guys like that, I'm sure the old standby, Jerry Brown kind of guys are going to be out there at the game, and that's going to be a real fun homecoming for them. And for me, I'll just be a wide-eyed fan. It'll be fun.
Definitely. The Nash era was great. That was one of my favorite eras. There was a little bit of a gap there between the Barkley years and then, and those were my favorite eras of basketball. And I think we're stuck right now in another Tom Gugliotta type of era where I'm pretty sure 10 years from now, 10 years, 15 years from now, after we get to the next peak, that I'm not going to remember much about this trough. It probably won't be very memorable because the Tom Gugliotta memories, they're few and far between. So what we talked about there, what Paul had kind of touched on, you seem to think the bench is going to be okay. I'm not sure if you are that sure about the three-point shooting. It seems like maybe you're still a little bit concerned about that. What scares you most about this team? What's your biggest concern, the problems this team might run into, Dave?
Well, I frankly, just because I can't get last year out of my head, I just think my biggest worry is their mental fortitude, their mental aspect. I mean, they had enough talent to win more games last year, and if they had won six more games, they'd have been in the playoffs, and then we'd be talking happy things right now, and we'd be talking about next steps and stuff like that of the team instead of trying to rebuild once again. So their psyche, they haven't proven as a group that they can collectively rise above. I mean, it's so much more fun as a fan to see a team exceed their expectations than to underwhelm. So obviously that, to me, that's the biggest worry. And more so than the X's and O's, I think Hornacek knows how to coach. I think these players know how to play. I think Hornacek knows how to put them in position to win games. It's just a matter of the players sticking together and listening to the coach and actually executing it. You know, I'm hoping that a Tyson Chandler and Teletovic and Luer on his level and Sonny Weems and guys like that can help the other dudes who had trouble last year staying focused and playing winning basketball. And I'm hoping those guys can help the whole team rise above. That's what I'm most worried about is the team just losing more games than they should just because they can't keep it together.
I'm not as concerned about some of the chemistry stuff, even though, there is the issue with Markieff Morris and how that's exactly going to work out. I am concerned. The three-point shooting is maybe one of the biggest concerns. The Knight and Bledsoe dynamic that I had asked Paul about, that's not encouraging to hear what Paul had to say, that he thinks that Brandon Knight's entering the season at less than 100% if these two guys are going to coalesce. And I think that's one of the big things that needs to happen for this team to make the playoffs, because I don't see how they're going to make a push if one of those guys, and right now it looks like Brandon Knight would probably be the one, underperforms. We already saw how that kind of worked with Goran, and then, that became an issue. Hopefully it won't with Brandon Knight. I don't know enough about his personality, whether, Paul said he was a gym rat, but is he going to become frustrated, or is he going to sulk, or is something else like that going to happen if he is not doing well? So I can see that being a problem. I don't know. What do you think about this? I'm still not sure that this team is actually more talented than last year's team on paper. Because last year there were all the off-the-court things, the personality side of it, the human side of it, that derailed the season. But, even as I look at it from last year, Goran Dragic, I would have taken over Brandon Knight. You had Isaiah Thomas, Gerald Green, Marcus Morris, these guys coming off the bench last year that were proven that you thought could light it up. Isaiah Thomas, Gerald Green, well, any night they can go for 20-plus points easy. I don't see those kinds of threats on this team. Do you think this team's actually more talented than last year's team?
I hear what you're saying, and I'm actually going to come back and say that I do. I think Tyson Chandler is better than last year's Alex Len. I think that's a given, right? I think this year's Markieff Morris has a decent chance to be better than last year's Markieff Morris. I think he was enabled by his brother to coast a little bit too much on rebounding and defense. And even so, I think Chandler and Len will kind of mask Markieff Morris's rebounding issues anyway. I think P.J. Warren is going to be a lot better than he was a year ago. I think P.J. Tucker will be about equal. I think Brandon Knight will be better than he was a year ago. And I think actually Brandon Knight at full power is as good as, just in a different way, but as good as Goran Dragic. Certainly much better than Goran Dragic ever was at age 23. I mean, we're comparing a fully actualized Goran Dragic to a still-growing Brandon Knight. So, and I really think Eric Bledsoe is going to take a step up. I know it's probable that he'll just be just like he was last year and just like he was the year before, which is basically a 17, 18-point-a-game, 5-assist, 5-rebound player. Gosh, only 18 players in the game had 17, 5, and 3 last year. So I think that's still pretty darn good. But I think Bledsoe can get even better. I think Bledsoe, if he makes a few more of his mid-range or three-pointers this year, he'll feel more comfortable on offense. And I think he's growing into his role. So I really do envision Eric Bledsoe being a guy who can be an all-star. I'm not talking about a three-time all-star or a 10-time all-star, because you're right, Jim, I do agree with you. Once we finally do get a better Suns team, this team will be the Gugliotta-type team or the Cliff Robinson-type team, if people remember that in the late 90s. I mean, really, we all think the Suns have been awesome forever and then all of a sudden now are bad. But, you had the Clifford Robinson-Jason Kidd team for the late 90s, and then you had the Gugliotta and Jason Kidd, and then Stephon Marbury teams in the early 2000s. It's really easy to be one of those average, forgettable teams, and this year's team is. But I do think the talent here is better than it was last year, which is better than any team collectively since 2010.
So if you think that it's a more talented team, and I'm assuming that you're probably not of the opinion that there's quite as much of a chance for the catastrophic meltdown that the team experienced last year. So do you think that this is a playoff team then?
No, that's what I was most worried. That's what I was saying earlier. That's what I'm most worried about, is I think there is a chance that this team underachieves. I think the talent is there. But again, last year's team was barely, we hope we finished eighth or ninth, and they finished 10th. So let's not rewrite history and make last year's team so much worse than they were supposed to be. They were supposed to barely make the playoffs. Even when they were playing their best last year, they were still 28-20 in eighth place. They might have been in seventh place for a day or two, but they were basically in eighth place, and they were hoping to hold off OKC. And we all remember, most of us remember that. So it doesn't take much to be better than last year's talented team, and it doesn't mean the Suns are suddenly a playoff team. It just means that they have the foundation to be a playoff team, and now it's a matter of them executing.
But they were 28-20, like leaking oil and smoking, going down the freeway, getting ready to, you know, pull over a flat tire. I picked that team to win more games than this team. I thought that team was more talented. So hopefully I'm wrong, because I don't think this is a playoff team. I think that there are too many areas that I think have to become pluses. I think that a lot of players are going to have to play better than they did last year, have better performances, basically just about everybody on the team, in order for the team to actually achieve and become a team that can be like a seventh or eighth seed. Because I think Warren's going to have to do things he hasn't done. Warren's going to have to do things he hasn't done. Pletovic is going to have to return to at least the form that he was. Weems is going to have to do things that he's never done. Ronnie Price is Ronnie Price. He needs to play better than he did, at least for here. You know, maybe if he returns to old Brandon, right? And then, like you said, you need other players to improve. You need a lot to right. And I'm not a person that thinks you can keep on stacking one thing on top of another. Like you had said before, that the Suns got kind of screwed with overachieving so early, winning 48 games in Ryan McDonough's first year. I don't think that that's something that you can count on for so many things to go right. So I think some things are going to go wrong with this team, and then so then all of a sudden you're not going to have 10 quality players. I think that the three-point shooting is still definitely very questionable. So there's enough things to doubt that I don't feel comfortable saying that this team is ready to take that step. And I hope I'm wrong, but I don't know. The Suns, you know, they seem to have that compulsion. They're compelled to get that late lottery pick. So until they can actually break that cycle, I think that they're in that con-building cycle. They refuse to be bad. They're trying to be good while they're doing it. And until you get that star, I think you're stuck, kind of like the Rockets were. And maybe, you know, like the Rockets eventually did get their star, and maybe the Suns will, and then they can break through that. But I just don't think they're there yet. They're kind of in their purgatory right now, just kind of stuck there. And like I'd ask Paul, and I'll ask you what you think about it. What do you think the pressure is on McDonough and Hornacek for this team to make the playoffs? Because, you know, a six straight year franchise record, you know, things, you know, maybe, you know, we say they're improving, but if they're actually improving, how come the team can't take the next step? So if they don't make the playoffs, I mean, how do you think that's going to unfurl at the end of the season if this ends up in another team with a ninth or tenth place finish?
You know, I actually do think Hornacek has some of the heat on his shoulders, and I think that's unwarranted. I think he did more last year than he might have. I don't know. I just don't think last year's talent was as good as you think it is, Jim. Although I picked the team to win 50 games, so who am I? I mean, I'm just a dude. So, you know, I only know so much, and my opinion changes on a monthly basis. So unlike, you know, most other people, I am guessing most of the time. But I'll say that I think Hornacek is a really good coach. His potential downfall is he doesn't really want to square off against strong-headed players. He'd rather they just do their job, and he loves players that just go ahead and do their job. So he may have an issue with that. I think McDonough, I don't see Sarver firing McDonough at all. I think unless the Suns completely implode, which they're not going to, they're not going to win 20 games. They're not going to win 15 games. They're going to win 35 to 45 games, and McDonough will be back because McDonough is trying. He's working hard, and he is making a lot of moves, and sometimes they're going to work and sometimes they're not. Kind of pretty much like the profile of Brian Colangelo in the late 90s. I mean, the only reason those Suns teams went to the playoffs every year in the late 90s was because the West was this decade's East. It was so easy to make the playoffs in the West in those years. They didn't win any more games than these Suns teams have, pretty much. I know they won over 40 games each year. But really, those were not world-beater teams, and they made the playoffs because the Western Conference in the late 90s was like the Eastern Conference today, where all you got to do is you know, have a good month, and all of a sudden you're in the playoffs. So, you know, I really do think McDonough's going to be around for a while if he wants to be. And I think Sarver likes having him around and being aggressive like that because you always know something's going to change. And I do think, unfortunately, that Jeff Hornacek is a little bit more dependent on the win total than Ryan McDonough is.
So maybe this is a fair assessment of the situation based off of your remarks, so a little bit more terse. It sounds like you think that both of these guys are pretty capable, qualified individuals doing their jobs well, but some of it just in the end is contingent on luck, and they just haven't gotten lucky yet.
No, I think McDonough could do better. I'm just saying that Sarver likes the turnover and likes the opportunity to get better, and McDonough's always going to provide another move. So I didn't say I thought McDonough was doing a great job. I think Jeff Hornacek is a good coach, but if you can't control your players, if you can't keep your players in line, then you're not going to be a long-term successful coach. But I'm guessing if Hornacek wants it, he'll be a coach in this league as long as guys like George Karl and Jerry Sloan and Cotton Fitzsimmons and guys like that did. You don't have to be a championship winner to have a 15-year career as a head coach in the league. So I think Hornacek is a good coach. I didn't say necessarily he's a great one. And so, yeah, you know, I'll back off. I don't think it's all about luck. I think those guys could be doing a better job than they are today. But it does depend on wins, I think, for more so than for Hornacek than it does for McDonough.
Okay, that's fair enough. Unfortunately, I think a little bit of it does involve luck. So that plays into the final word on some of this stuff. Sometimes a ping pong ball bounces a certain way, a numerical combination. You have the right assets when a guy like James Harden becomes available, different things like that. So the Thunder have a lapse in judgment and make a mistake. Well, I think I'm going to cut us off there, Dave. I think we've ran long enough here. Do you have any more thoughts that you want to, before we sign off here, before the season gets rolling?
Well, Scott Howard commented today in one of the comment threads on the site that the Suns need to start 3-0. So here we go with the must-win games already. I don't think the Suns need to start 3-0. They play their opening night against Dallas at home. And then they have a home-and-home against the retooled Portland Trail Blazers, who only have one starter back. I think all three are winnable games. I think it's really hard to win a home-and-home, though, over the weekend, home-and-home with Portland. But, yeah, I think the Suns do have a chance to start the season 3-0, and I think that will give us a good idea of whether they are capable right now out of the gate playing like a playoff team. But I don't think they're must-win or anything like that. So I hope by next week when we're on the podcast, the Suns at least have a winning record coming out of the gate in the season, and they have a chance to do so.
All right, sounds good. Well, I know everybody's definitely waiting to see how all of that plays out. The NBA season is just about here, and we're going to have plenty of actual basketball discussion on the site in the coming weeks. So that should be a lot of fun. I want to thank everybody for listening tonight. Thanks, Dave, for joining me. I want to thank Paul Coro from the Arizona Republic again for coming on. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, everybody, for listening. This is Jim Kochenour, and this is the BS of the Sun podcast.
You know that it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the